We're on a mission to help founders hit product market fit faster. We do this by interviewing founders that have been there. I'm your host, Adam O'Donnell. This podcast is put together by Zendesk for Startups. We offer 6 months free of Zendesk customer support suite for qualified product-oriented companies. Scott, welcome to Sit Down Startup Founder Podcast. Excited to hear your journey to product market fit and all the juicy details around that. But if you could first kind of just, what is Spellbook for anyone who doesn't know, and kind of maybe how much money have you raised?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Adam. Spellbook is the first generative AI copilot for lawyers, launched back in summer 2022. We help lawyers draft and review legal documents, which is a really difficult, monotonous job that kills the joy of the practice of law for a lot of lawyers, or used to it anyways. We've raised today over $30 million. Yeah, US. Yeah.
Congratulations. That's awesome. Well, yeah. That's a fast journey overall. So I'm excited to hear kind of how you got to that, how you hit product market fit. But I first, could you share maybe a lower moment that you've had in your journey as an inspiration for founders who might be stuck in that right now, and maybe kind of how you got past it?
Yeah, so it actually wasn't that fast. We originally started our company. There's always like, well, how did you actually get to that breakout moment? Our breakout moment was in 2022. I started this company because I had a small business before this. We built musical instruments. It was called Mune, or site's still online, munemusic.com. And one day I got a legal bill that took out half the money out of our bank account. Now, we never had a lot of money in our bank account, but we were a small business. And I got this legal bill and I was like, holy cow, I had no idea this legal work was going to be that expensive. And I think everyone, or most entrepreneurs, have had that experience, at least, of getting their first legal bill and just being like, what the heck? This is like nothing else that I pay for in terms of the cost and value. And so that was a down moment for me, just realizing how expensive it was just to do the basics of setting up and operating a business and protecting our IP and all that sort of stuff. Just realizing like, wow, like I had raised a small angel check for this small business, and that angel check was just like wiped out with half of it was wiped out with legal fees, basically. And that was just a brutal moment for me. Realizing how much money we would need, just not even to get to product market fit, not even to service customers, just to operate and get the basics dealt with. And I was a new grad. I didn't have a lot of money myself. And so we actually started a company called Rally a little while after that. I worked as a director of engineering for another company, but this legal pain was on my mind. I really had a grudge. And we started this company called Rally, and our idea was, this was before LLMs, this was 2018 really, we formally got started. Our idea was, well, all this legal paperwork should be automatable. There should be templates. You know, when a lawyer goes to draft you an employment agreement or a sales contract, you know, they should have a standard template that has everything configured, and they plug in a few variables and out pops, you know, a beautiful employment agreement. So Rally was all about that, and that's called document automation or templating. And we raised a little bit of money quickly, first from some angels, then from VCs. I found two amazing co-founders before that, Daniel and Matt. Dan was a lawyer, so I come from a product and engineering background. Dan was a lawyer and experienced the pain of practicing law, and Matt was a small business entrepreneur like myself who had the same pains. And we built this solution over the course of years, sold it to around 100 law firms. You know, we got a very modest amount of ARR, but you know, we were not rocketing. It was a grind until 20. It was 4 years of grind of selling this product, trying to improve it, trying to figure out how to differentiate between the other things. And ultimately, we could sell this product, you know, to these 100 law firms, but we really struggled to get lawyers to use it. And they would be excited about the idea of automating their work. And then inevitably every lawyer, you know, using our tool, they would get excited and build these fancy templates, and then they'd go to do client work and they'd say, oh, you know what, this client work is too bespoke. I'm not going to use Rally for it. That was the name of our tool. And we'd hear that same feedback over and over. Lawyers were excited to adopt it. They pay us money, they get set up, they get their templates set up, and then they wouldn't use them. They'd be like, oh, you know what? The work I'm doing today is too bespoke for Rally. And we heard that over and over. And also through this 4-year period, our director of growth launched over 100 landing pages. So we were coming up with all sorts of different spins, and we had little micro products and all sorts of weird. At one point, we were Shopify for law firms. Like we tried literally over 100 different value propositions to figure out, you know, how to get that spark, how to, you know, I think a product market fit is the customer is pulling the product out of your hands faster than you can provide it. And you know, it was a slog for 4 years, and we were not getting that. At the same time, you know, we had some pressure from investors. Why aren't you scaling? Why aren't you hiring more people? Why do you only have this 8-person team? And I'd be like, hey, I really don't think we have product market fit. And they'd be like, what do you mean? It's 3 years in. How do you not have product market fit? You know, there were conversations that were kind of like near tears of like, why aren't you scaling this? Why isn't it growing faster? And I'm like, we're still searching, and I think it's really hard to get product market fit. And that was a really low and lonely moment, I would say, to stand by, like to tell our investors, yeah, after 3, 4 years, I still don't think we have product market fit. I think we should keep our burn super low. I'm still confident the problem is real. So what led us through that? Why we kept at it and kept burn super low for so long? Was because we believed that the problem was real. Like getting legal bills is a horrible experience for most people. And we really thought that the work should be done 10x more efficiently. And it was just a matter of time for us to crack the nut. And then, yeah, LLMs came along and we started playing with GPT-2. We were really early. And then I used GitHub Copilot. And this was kind of like this was the aha moment for us. And I'll pause before I get into that, but you know, any questions so
This
far for
journey
you?
is amazing to hear, because when you say started in 2022, the journey was way before that, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, we were, you know, banging our heads on this problem for years before, you know, the LLM moment. And yeah.
Would you say to someone in your shoes where, like, you just had the investor meeting and they're like, seriously, it's been 3.5 years, like, you have something here. Like, I'm sure they were even pointing out some of the successes that you had. How did you hold yourself and like stay disciplined to not think that you had it, but even when you didn't?
There was like some philosophical stuff. Like maybe this gets a little bit esoteric, but there was some really influential, you know, sort of philosophical reading I did around that time. You know, one of them is what the, oh man, sorry, I'm just having a,
You're good. No, we can edit that. Yo, you're good.
can we edit this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh yeah, the Self-Reliance by Ralph Waldo Emerson. That essay was like super influential to me at the time. I don't know if you've read it, but it has this quote. What is it? Sorry, I'm just looking it up here. To believe your own thought, to believe that what is true in your private heart is true for all men, that is genius. And it kind of just talks about, you know, how difficult it is to actually just believe what's in front of your face, and how genius oftentimes is literally just sort of being independent-minded and believing what is in front of your face, believing the facts, and not getting caught up in sort of this group think. And at the time, you know, going through 2020, everyone's raising these mega rounds. This was the peak of comfort and luxury in SaaS at the time. So it was pretty countercultural at the time, I think, to be so lean. And you know, going back to that essay was like really influential on me. And like, you know, there's aspects of in my mind, I'm interested in like meditation, mindfulness. To me, that's partially what that's about, is like Can you just see what's in front of your face rather than whatever is happening out there kind of washing over you and getting swept away in whatever bandwagon people are jumping onto? And it was just it was a frenzy at the time of VC capital and companies scaling to a degree that they really shouldn't, and everyone was doing it. So yeah, these things kept me really grounded during that time. Yeah.
Man,
Even yeah.
thanks for sharing that. And I the your ability to just like stay laser on what mattered and ignoring the environment is just admirable. And I've heard stories on this podcast where people with previous companies shared how they scaled before they had actually hit product market fit. They convinced themselves that they did, and it literally killed the company. It's almost like you cannot come back from that.
It is a devastatingly difficult thing to come back from. I think you can, but it's like it is hard. It's hard on the company. It's hard on the people, especially if you grow and then you have to let people go. Like it's brutal. So yeah, I'm lucky. My co-founders, were also. I guess it wasn't just me. My co-founders also were, aligned, very much aligned on this. And I'm lucky that I had that because it was really easy to get swept away. Yeah.
That's so
Yeah.
cool. Well, help me in that point. So like you had the LLM idea, and then how long did it take to go from that to building something and then testing and like iterating? Or did you just go and like start sharing what it could be to prospects?
Yeah. How the aha moment happened was I used GitHub Copilot. So this was the first LLM product that was really out there. This was before, some people don't remember this, but GitHub Copilot came out long before ChatGPT, like 9 months, 12 months before. It was in beta for a while, maybe even before that. So GitHub Copilot is this tool that helps a programmer write code. And I use that. I'm an engineer and I was like, holy cow. I've never used a product that's this useful. And what amazed me about it is it just automatically was this wind at my back helping me, without me even having to do really anything. I'm just doing my normal workflow, and this thing is suggesting code to me as I'm working. And I remember this moment where it suggested to me this paragraph of code. And I looked at that code and I said, that can't be right. That seems too complicated. This is junk. And then I deleted it. I said, no, that's not a good suggestion. And then I realized 10 minutes later, holy cow, it had actually figured out something that I didn't. It was foreseeing a problem that I didn't. And that was the first time in my entire life where AI sort of outsmarted me. And I was like, holy cow. And then so the aha moment was, the lawyers we were working with, they always were dealing with bespoke contracts, bespoke situations. They weren't drafting new things from templates. They're usually dealing with an existing document and they have to manipulate it in some way. And LLMs were so good at sort of jumping into an existing document and helping you like auto-complete, modifications that you're trying to make. And so that was our first product. It was basically like auto-complete for contracts. Oh, you need to add in a late payment clause. Type late payment, hit autocomplete, and we'll autocomplete it. And once we had that moment, I think we had a live working prototype in Microsoft Word in 2 weeks. And I built it on evenings and weekends. It wasn't a board objective. For a while, I didn't even mention it to my co-founders because I was like, this is just like a silly, weird project. And kind of distracting, to mention something like that when you're working, your head's down, working on these other goals. I was like, oh, I'm just going to prototype this on evenings and weekends. And then I brought in Dan, the lawyer. Once I had a prototype, Dan, my lawyer co-founder, I said, hey, can we show this to some customers? And we just demoed it over a call. And it was like their eyes popped out of their head. They're like, I've never seen anything like this. That this would completely change. And Dan, who practiced as a lawyer, was like, yes, this is what I needed. This is what we need to sell. And we went from that to then a marketing launch a few weeks later, to an early access wait list. And then within 3 months after that moment, we had changed the name of the company. We had basically fully moved all our resources to this new product. And we had more revenue from this new product than we had generated in the past like 4 years with our other product within 3 months. So that's what, this product market fit moment felt like. And I think it was really it was a really important moment because, while we were holding out for product market fit and, telling our board like, hey, we don't think we have it, they're saying, hey, you're waiting for a moment that's never going to come. This kind of product market fit you're searching for isn't real, and you wonder yourself, are we just chasing a mirage, and to make it more difficult, some companies never find an inflection point like that, and they find another way. But for us, that inflection point and that magic moment was totally real. It happened so fast. Within 3 months, we had 30,000 lawyers on our wait list. So, and we were just our sales team. Our entire sales team had every 30-minute slot for the entire week booked for weeks. But it took a long time to get there. And it was real. That inflection point was real. And then when that happened, it was like, okay, let's raise some money, let's scale the team. And it was just a switch from this lean, conservative mode to, all right, it's game on. We have to race in this opportunity as fast as possible.
It's so cool. And you raised at like a must less ideal time for startups than you could have if you had taken the bait and raised before you hit product market fit, which would have probably potentially killed the company. So I love how, and you're still able to raise a lot of money. So it's almost like ignoring the tide was okay in your situation.
I mean, we still raised a great round, a great like great multiple. And what made it easy was our usage metrics. So it wasn't even the revenue looked good, but what amazed investors was our usage and retention graphs, where they could see like, wait, users are trying this, and then they're coming back the next day, and the next day, and the next day. It's like that's actually extremely rare. That's something we focus a lot on usage metrics. I think that's the hardest thing in the world is actually getting someone to use your product habitually. Is like selling a product is actually pretty easy by comparison.
That's amazing. The products that actually hit product have product market fit will always be able to get favorable funding terms, is what I'm hearing.
I think so.
That is so good. Well, is it what's something that you would do differently looking back in your journey, the 4 year journey?
Yeah, I think one mistake we made in those hard 4 years was we kept tacking on our new ideas to this core. We kept feeling like, oh, we're going to add on this next feature and add on this next feature. One thing we did really right with the AI product is we said, let's just throw away all the marketing that we ever had before and focus solely on this one thing. I think that's so much easier for customers to digest. And if I had my time back, those 100 experiments that we did, I would have made them more isolated, rather than just continually tacking on bloat to this core piece of software we had. I think more pre-product market fit startups should almost think of every experiment as almost a new company, and that's hard to do because you have all this sunk cost of, oh, we built this, so you always have this incentive to be like trying to make it all make sense. Like, why did we build these 20 things? Well, let's try to connect them all together, and that. Weaving everything together and the story of everything together gets really convoluted. Like we had to tell the stories like, why are we both Shopify for law firms and a document templating company and this and that? It made a really muddled message for customers. I think one of the things that made Spellbook so successful, we actually came up with a new brand name, new website, and we basically didn't refer to anything we had ever built before because it just muddled the message, and that narrow simple pitch, the crisp pitch was better. Like I was talking to another company the other day, they're at the early stage of their journey and they have this really cool product. I won't say too much about what it is because I don't know if they're fully out with it yet, but they're this really cool product and it does like 5 or 10 different things. And I'm like, I just want to buy this one thing. If you can just have a web page that sells this one thing, if you can tell me you can do this one thing really well, then I'm in. If you tell me you're doing these 10 things, I don't believe you, and I think it's going to be crappy. So, yeah.
That's so true. I had the same experience selling a product and had like around 10 features, and we had like some traction. I think that's the annoying part, is 'cause you it sounded like you had some traction. You had paying customers.
Yep, we
So
don't. Yeah.
it's like you get like, well, they're still paying and like they're using it okay enough. So it feels like wrong to just say we were clearly wrong in this. You know, but when I went to them with the 10 features and I said, if you had $100, how would you allocate the $100 to these 10 features? And it was like $90 for one feature and the 10 for the
There you
rest. And
go.
I was like,
Yeah.
so we killed everything else
Exactly.
and focused on that.
Yep. Yeah. Super good strategy. And the thing I think engineers get wrong, like I came from an engineer and I screwed up so much because of this engineering thinking. As an engineer, it is so possible to build a product that can do 100 things. And actually, engineers love that. They love building like these modular systems that can do this, but also do this. The problem, the thing that, and so product can scale, like engineering can scale to do 100 things. That's easy and fun. It's like a fun Sudoku puzzle for engineers. It's like, how do I build one thing that can do 100 things? But the thing that doesn't scale is marketing. You know, it takes so fewer, like you only have so few words before a message gets muddled and confusing and you're losing people. And I think that's what engineers and product people need to really understand. It's like, yeah, you can build something that does 100 things and serves 100 markets. It's trivial, but actually marketing that is, it becomes un undo. It does, it's not really, it doesn't work. Yeah. You need, especially in 2024, you need this crispness to cut through.
That is, I love that. Like, you understand how engineers got there, because they get excited about certain things and they're naturally going to move in that direction. But marketing says that we can't, it just doesn't work. You got to have the one thing. Yeah, that's.
And here's the thing I always talk about to our team. It's like, would you rather buy a kettle, a toaster, or a material heater? The engineer always wants to make a material heater. And it's like, oh, you can put in toast, you can put in water, you can put in a turkey, you can put in all these different things. And like, no one wants to buy a material heater, you know, that can, is this list of 100 things you can heat up in it. You know, they will, the person wants, if someone wants to buy a kettle or they want to buy a toaster. And there's actually like, if you look at the Walkman, also had this story of like, they considered, I don't know if you saw this, but they considered, you know, should the Sony Walkman, you know, should it, I think, have a radio and like all these other like different features? Like, no, it's just a CD player. It's just for listening to CDs when you're on the go. And that's the only, and they considered doing all these other things with it. And it actually would have weakened the product and made it less clear what it was for. So, yeah, that's one of my biggest learnings.
That's a great realization. And I think of even the iPhone, where Steve Jobs initially launched it was not all these different things. It was just like a few things. So even a most complex, potentially you could sell it on everything, they picked a couple that,
It was like phone, browser, internet, or something like that.
and it was not a that that's so good. Well,
Perfect.
thank you so much, Scott, for this, for your time. What's the best way to reach out to you if I'm a founder? Is it LinkedIn or Twitter or X?
I'm both. I'm definitely very active on Twitter, so that's a good place to find me.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time, and sure, just being real about your story.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Thank you for listening. If you want to learn more about Zendesk for Startups, check out our website, zendesk.com/startups. Also, we're always looking to improve, so don't hesitate to email me with any feedback on how we can ask better questions, guess the target, or anything else that we can do to better help you as a founder. My email is adam.odonnell@zendesk.com.